Hey, I'm Michael Dorinda.
And I'm Jake Bennett.
And welcome to episode 158 of the North Meets South Meets Hopes and Dreams podcast.
Meets Hopes and Dreams? Oh, I've got to hear about this. What are the hopes and dreams here?
I hope and dream that we have something to talk about this episode.
We've got plenty. We've got plenty. Let me start by saying... this last week, I had the best mustache I've ever had in my life, and it was incredible. It lasted for almost a whole week, and today I had to get rid of it, and I was sad because, you know, here's the deal. Let me be real honest. I had to shave it this morning because I had like this mustache power thing going on. And yesterday I was undefeated. I could not lose yesterday. And I didn't want to go to work today and ruin the streak. So I shaved it. I was like, I'm done. Let me tell you, can I just tell you real quick? I don't want to break my own patting myself on the back here, but I'm just going to tell you what happened. So on Friday, I went into work last week, had my mustache. By the way, here it is. I do a freedom stash every year. So like for the 4th of July, I do a mustache. So I grow up my like facial hair for June, and then July, I do a mustache. I got 8 guys to do it with me this year, which is so fun. So next year, maybe I'll start a Twitter group and see who I can get to do it and just, you know, freedom stash for the win. It's going to be great. Even Australians and Canadians, you're all invited to do the freedom stash. It's going to be awesome. So did my freedom stash, went to work on Friday. And we have this basketball hoop up on a door, like one of those little Nerf basketball hoops, okay, mm-hmm. in our banking department. And then there's literally a tape line on the floor. One of my buddies brought it in, and the original idea was we were each going to put $1 in for the week, and whoever got the shot first earns the money. But, and then, we ended up starting getting decent at it. And so anyway.
Yeah.
I've made it once a month. Here's the deal. It has to be your first shot of the day. You can't warm up. No warm-ups.
Right, one shot
from the line. Mm-hmm. If you make it, you get to put your name on a sheet of paper that's on the door. Great. So it had been 2 months since I'd made this shot. I could not get it. And so anyway, I went on Friday. Yep. Yeah, exactly. Yes. Little mini ball. Yep. So on Friday, I went in with the mustache, made it, nailed it. So excited. Got my name put on the door. Okay.
Nice.
Then I go in Monday. Still have the mustache. Make it first shot. So 2 days in a row, that's never happened to me before. Well, then there's also another line that's like 3 feet back from the regular line that we call mm-hmm. the money ball shot. Yep. Nobody's ever made it first shot. So I had, mind you, I had just made the regular shot. So I back up. I'm like, hey, I'm feeling it. Let's go for it. I made the second shot, the money ball shot. Yes. Unbelievable. So then I tell the developers that morning when we're having our stand-up, I'm like, hey, by the way, it's a really good day for me. You know, I feel like I'm going to win the game that we play every day. In our development meeting, we have this thing called Boom Party, which is like Bomberman. And so if you win all 3 rounds, you get the crown for the day in our dev chat. So I told them, I called it. I was like, hey, by the way, I'm going to win this today. And they were not going easy on me because they want to kill you. There's no way, you know, it's like on the last round, everybody's against you. I won. Yeah. I won all 3 games. Unbelievable. Unbelievable day yesterday. So I had to shave it just to make sure that I didn't screw up the streak today. And so that was the story of the stash this week. It was a good week. It was a good week.
Well,
so.
I got one of those little hoops for my birthday this year from the in-laws. And mm-hmm. it's like, it's got rubber like strip on the door. So it's like supposed to kind of wobble around, but anytime the ball touches any part of that thing, the whole thing just shakes and wobbles around. Yeah. So if your shot is not dead in the center of the ring, it's not going in 9 times out of 10.
Right.
Because it just like flings the ball out. And we've got 2.4 meter ceilings here, which is like fairly standard.
It's like 8 feet. What is it? Let me see here. Let me see here.
Yeah,
it's
about
7 feet 11 inches. Yeah, so it's 7 feet 8, you know, 10.5 inches. So almost
fairly standard for like most homes built these days. 2.7, which would be like 9 feet, I guess, or 12. I think it's usually like 8 foot, 9 foot, and 12 foot ceilings or whatever.
Other 8 feet, almost 9 feet. Yeah, almost 9 feet. It's 2.7.
So there's not much room to get arc.
Right.
The shot. It's, you have to shoot it very flat and you have to be very precise with it. And so it's,
you want the secret? You want the secret? You know what it is?
Don't be terrible like me.
It's called the Cobra. It's the underhand and it's a backspin with just like this. Yeah.
Okay.
That's the trick.
I'll
and so that allows you to start low at like your waist mm-hmm. and then you get the backspin, you get that shooter's roll and lay it right in there, man.
after give that a go. Because it's like,
yep.
It's easier for Eli because Eli will go right up to the ring and he's,
exactly.
You know, he's hip height. So he can actually get some arc on his shot. Mm-hmm. No good for me. Mm-hmm. So the amount of times that boy towels me up, you know, 20 to 4 or something like that, it's embarrassing.
It's hilarious. That's so funny. Yeah.
But he loves it.
That's good. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah, he's on he's on school holidays at the moment. So we...
Okay.
I had him yesterday for the day and we went to the shops. They've got like one of these giant chess boards. He's like, let's play chess.
Oh, cool.
And
like, does he like chess? He could play chess?
No.
Oh, okay, okay. I thought he knows how to play chess.
Very vaguely the rules. Like I know that the pawns can move like one space, and I know that the knight can go like in an L shape, and the queen or the, you know. So it's very loose. Like there's no rule, and he's six, so it's like just let him win because you don't want an incident in the mall. So that was a bit of fun because
that is fun.
I had to stop taking all of his pawns eventually because he just, I'm like, are you sure you want to put your piece there? Like what shape can like the knight move in? He goes, oh yeah. I probably shouldn't. So, in the end, he just decided to take his bishop or whatever and walk over and just take my king. I'm like, all right, well, that's been 20 minutes. That's long enough. And there haven't been any tears. So let's get out of here before something happens.
Nice. That's awesome.
So I want to look it up because like he enjoys it. So I'd like to at least have a knowledge of like which pieces can move where, like a fairly accurate knowledge of that, and then the rest we can just make up as we go.
I think that like chess.com has you know some tutorials and stuff. It's pretty simple. Rooks move in straight lines. Bishops move in diagonals. The knights move in the L shape. Then you've got the queen can move anywhere. The king can move one space anywhere. And then the pawns can move two spaces forward on their first move and only one space forward on any other move, but they can only attack diagonal. They can't attack directly in front of themselves.
Right.
So, yeah. That's all of them. That's all the moves.
Check that out.
Nice. Yep. Look up Fool's Mate. That's a good one, too, to know. So if you're playing with somebody who doesn't know how to play chess, you can typically checkmate them in about three or four moves, which makes you feel really fun. It's really good. It's a good move. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway. Okay. So... shall we talk about the stuff? So I think maybe one thing to talk about real quick is that Tim McDonald put out a new Laravel pennant feature that dropped this week.
I've been waiting for this for so long.
Have you? Okay. So let's talk real quick about feature flags and the idea behind them and what things it affords you as a development team. And then let's talk about pennant. And then let's talk about the new feature as well. So let's talk real quick about like feature flags. So the typical way that you roll out features without feature flags is you just say, okay, we've been working on this feature for a week and we're pretty confident it's going to work. And we've tested it locally and we've tested it in our CI environment. And now we're going to ship it to production. And so you ship it to production and you watch your error tracking service to make sure that you know nothing breaks in production. And hopefully you've got like a group of people that you typically say like, hey, Scott, can you go try this out? Because you know you're a pretty good tester and you know just try it out and see if you can do anything with it, and they break it, whatever. And then you're like, ah, oh, crap, it is broken. I didn't think about that. And then you have to like roll back and then you have to go fix it and then you kind of do it again. You couple iterations of this and there you have it. The problem with that is you know, ideally you don't have a breakage, and most of the time you probably don't. But there's always this sort of like lurking fear in the back of your mind, like, oh, I don't think it's gonna mess up, but I always like want to ship it on like a Monday night, like after everybody's gone, so I can be the first one to test it, sort of deal. Mm-hmm. Well, feature flags removes that barrier for me. It does, at least, because what it allows you to do is it allows you to ship a feature to production without exposing it to anybody except for yourself or a group of beta testers or whoever else you want to bring in on that one. And so you basically surround your feature with, in Laravel, you actually get a directive with this pennant package. And in the directive, you can say at feature, and then you can either pass a string in there if you name the feature with a string, or there's a class-based resolution that you can use. And so you pass in the class there, at feature, and then the name of the class. And if that feature is enabled for that particular user over that particular scope, it will show it. And if it is not enabled, then it won't. And so you can use a blade directive, and then there's also a facade that you can do the same thing. Feature enabled or whatever it is inside of your controllers or inside of your actions or your jobs or whatever it is. And so you can kind of bifurcate your logic and decide what you want to do based on who has the feature and who doesn't. That's the great part about it. And for me, it has helped me ship more often and with greater confidence than I ever did before. Because even if a feature isn't completely 100% bulletproof tested, I know it's exactly perfect, I can ship it and I can iterate on it after getting it into production. As long as I know it's not going to like bork everything, I don't even have to like push it to everybody. I can say it's the end of the week, it's Thursday, I'm going to push it out. We'll maybe do some tweaks next week and we'll push it out again. And there you go. But man, it's insanely powerful. How long have you guys been using that sort of development flow for, Michael? It's been relatively new to me and I've been loving it.
Yeah, we've been using it sort of haphazardly, I guess, for the last 5 or 6 months, I reckon. Like, and when I say haphazardly, we've kind of like gated the feature in the back end but forgotten to hide it on the front end. And so there's been like people that have clicked a link and then gotten a, you know, a 403 or whatever because the feature's not actually active, but the link to that feature was visible in the menu bar and things like that. So and this is, I guess, part of the problem with having a separate front end is that you don't have the blade directive. So when you're building the back end functionality, you have to remember to like expose that through inertia or wherever else or of your API and making sure that the front end is actually built in such a way that it considers the feature flags. Whereas when you're using, you know, Livewire, if you're using Blade, it's more evident because, you know, you are more likely to be building the front end than if you have a separate back and front end team working on it. So it's been nice. But when Pennant came out, which was what, Laracon US last year?
Right around. Yeah. No, you know what? Actually, I think it was talked about in Laracon India.
Was it earlier?
Maybe.
Than that?
I think they were talking about it then, but it wasn't released then. I think it like sort of released with Laravel 10. I don't know. I don't remember. It's a good question. I'm not sure.
So yeah, when it came out, you know, we started playing around with it, and I remember using it for the Laracon AU website last year, where I wanted to have a feature, like to use the feature flags as like a time bomb kind of thing, that like show this thing after this date. But the way that the feature flags were resolved by Pennant at the time was it would resolve it once and then it would associate it with the user, right? And because the Laracon AU website is more of a like a visitor, a guest user kind of thing, there's no user to associate it with. So when it resolved that feature, you know, it was before that date, for example, we wanted to show the schedule after a certain date. Because it had already resolved it, it doesn't resolve it again.
Correct.
And so, you know, we worked around that somehow.
Basically, it's like you can't use it at that point. Yeah, it's like...
Yeah. Yep. So I think
you
can't
use it in that way necessarily. Yeah.
Right. I think the way that we worked around it in the end was to use like the explicit array storage so that every request
would do it,
right?
There you go.
So with this feature that Tim shipped this week, he messaged me and he's like, I finally did it.
Was to introduce
this before hook in a similar way to like Laravel policies work, where you can provide a escape hatch, I suppose, to do a test that like if you have an admin user logged in, they default have permission to do everything in the application. So this before hook in Pennant works in a similar way, where you could put these kind of things in there and then get it to trigger based on an environment variable or get it to based on, you know, a time switch or something like that. And that way it would always check that before then resolving it from whatever the normal case would be, you know, to use a lottery or to resolve it from the database or whatever else. So that's going to be really useful in a lot of situations like that, where you want to, you know, either globally enable or disable a feature without impacting on the already resolved values in the database, because it'll skip doing those checks.
Which is huge. So let me kind of go back just a quick step to talk about this. So each feature, if you're using class-based resolution, which is what we do, when that feature first encountered in your code base, what it will do is it will, previous to this, it would attempt to resolve that feature. And so the resolve method is called on that feature, and it gets passed a scope. Now, the default scope that the feature gets is the logged in user. That's what passes in to that scope by default. Now, you can change that if you want to. If you're using the feature facade, you can pass your own scope. So the scope could be, hey, I don't want the user, I want the user's team. And then the resolve function now gets the team. Or you can pass a string. So you could say scope is, and what we've done sometimes is we say scope is global, just a string called global. And then what it does is when it encounters that flag, it will pass that scope in, and then it stores the results of that resolve method, either truthy or falsy, true or false, inside of your preferred storage driver. So in our case, we use the database. And so if it looks when it's going to resolve that and sees that that scope, that particular scope has already been resolved, it will not resolve it again, which is why that global scope is really nice. You just resolve it once and then it's resolved for everybody. However, what Michael said is true, which is once it's resolved once, it's never resolved again. So if you wanted to do something where you said, okay, now I want to enable it for everybody, what you'd have to do is you'd have to wipe out all the values for everybody in the database, which is annoying because you have to do that in production somehow. You know, you have to go kill all those database records, or you have to, you know, modify the code, whatever. So with this check now, and I think there's one thing to point out here, Michael, that is maybe, I don't know if this is strictly this, but what he said is this is it. The before is performing always in memory checks before resolving a feature's stored value. That always in memory, I'm not sure what exactly he means by that.
Like you would always do it as opposed to, you know, not like skipping the check if there is a value in your drive, storage driver. Yeah.
Yep. That makes sense. Yep. And so in the case that you want to always resolve this particular thing, then it will do that. That before check will always do it. And you don't have to return a value, right? You can just not return a value. So instead of, you can just return all or not return anything. Just return void. And in the case that it returns void, it won't do anything. It'll just fall through to the resolve method. But if you do return a truth or a truthy value from that, it will, you know, either enable or disable that feature for that thing. So the time bombs thing worked, like you said there. And then the other thing that's interesting that we talk about, that we've talked about too, is like if you had, so the way he calls that is not a time bomb, but like basically a rollout schedule, right?
Yeah.
Schedule a feature rollout based to be on like this date for everybody. So we have a beta group that's going to get it, but then 2 weeks from now, everybody should get it unless we need to specify otherwise, which I think is also really great. So
yeah,
really cool addition there, and much needed addition. I think that's pretty awesome. So
also the ability to, whether you do this in the database or if you do it in an environment variable, you know, being able to globally toggle a feature. You know, you might have rolled something out and it's, you know, some issue, like maybe it's connecting with a third party and the third party has got some downtime or whatever, rather than persistently hitting that and then degrading the experience of your users, you can just turn it off using, you know, either a database flag or an environment variable flag and say, you know, this thing is now off. So that's where I would
That's a great point.
The before. In the before, I'd be like, no, this feature, yes, it's a feature in the application, but we're globally turning it off for whatever reason. You know, abuse.
Love that. Yeah, that's a great idea. So then that makes it really easy to manage. Yes, because then you can resolve it basically for a scope or globally, right? You could do both. You don't have to choose one or the other. You can do both. Nice. Yep. Yeah, that's a really powerful feature. I'm liking this a lot.
And that's a good shortcut, you know, so that you don't have to then go and purge all of the already resolved records.
Yes.
Which means it doesn't impact on the status of, you know, individual users might have something enabled. You don't have to remove it all and have to re-resolve it.
That is also a huge problem.
Right now, we're turning this off. And that way, you know, once you flick that global switch again, it will go back to whatever it was before. So if you had access before, you will continue to have access once that before hook, you know, whatever that is restored to that original state as well. So, I'm very excited for that feature.
Yeah, we have had ones where we've turned it on just for a specific group. Like manually, we went into the database and edited the value to just return true. And it was, you know, it was particular to those those users. And maybe that's not a great way to do it, but like we needed to do it that way for a period of time. But then there was a situation where I needed to turn it off, and it was like, dang it. Well, I have to either just modify that code and re-resolve it for everybody, or just always, you know, I don't know. It was just goofy. So I didn't really have a good way to do that, but this is exactly way.
Depending on where you are, if you're not, you know, if you're in an organization that has documented policies around, like I know as part of ISO and as part of SOC 2, like there's the whole, someone has to approve the code. There's got to you know, all of these steps that you have to go through, which can delay, you know, just versus just having a switch that you can just turn off. And that can then, you know, I think we spoke about this previously, where we can then put the feature flags in the hands of the business rather than the developers.
And the developers,
they can be like, well, you know, there's a compliance issue here, or there's some other business reason that we want to disable this feature. So they can just go into some interface and just turn it off.
I love that. So, yeah, I really like that.
Big fan of this edition.
Huge. The other thing that's that I, maybe we could talk about Pennant for just a minute here, is that these features, if it's not returned from the before, typically you are invoking some sort of storage mechanism that you're using to resolve these things out of, right? So it's whether it's the database or whether it's, you know, Redis or some other deal, you're having to query or go grab something to figure out if it's enabled or not. So just like any other thing, if you're not eager loading those values, you end up making a query for each one of them. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things you're going to want to probably do, is if you have a page with a lot of different feature flags on it, it's a great idea to resolve those ahead of time. Because if you don't, and you go look at your Laravel debug bar, you're going to see, you know, one query per feature. And so that can rack up the number of queries you've got pretty quickly. One thing that we did to help solve this problem is there's this one page where we're doing a lot of rapid application development on it. And this is one of the only places that we are using the feature flagging Pennant stuff. And there's other applications, but in this application, that's where we're using it the most. And so that features directory, the Laravel app features directory, what we'll do is we actually have a little command that scans through that list of classes that's in there and then says, resolve this for all users ahead of time. Like every single user in the database, every single user that we have in the database, resolve it for all of them. Now, we've only got hundreds of users, right? So like it's in this in particular case, it's all internal users. And so we can resolve it for everybody ahead of time. And then what we do is we say, okay, now get feature ; loaded. And what I think that does is it says basically grab the distinct features that are in the database and give me the list of those. So then what we do is we say bump that feature loaded list up against that list of classes that we just grabbed out of the file system. And any of the features that no longer exist, purge them from the database. So get rid of them. They're old, they're stale. And then we cache that list of features that I just mentioned. And we eager load those features every time that big page is loaded. So we basically, ahead of time, when we're doing our pipeline, our continuous integration deployment pipeline, we're in advance loading all of them, caching all of them, and then asking them to be eager loaded on that page, which works really well. I was going to talk to Tim about that and see if there was like some way to do that. If you tagged a feature with some tag or something like that and just could say eager load all the features with this tag, that would be really handy.
Or an attribute.
I think. Ooh, even better. See, there we go. I think because having to eager load them manually, you kind of have to look through all of the things that are on that page, and you just kind of have to know, oh, these are the ones that you're using. But it'd be nice to just be able to tag them and then say eager load all these. I'm sure I could roll something like that myself. Mm. You know, just throw it on there and then Tim, what do you think of this?
Yeah, there's precedent in the framework now or using attributes for that kind of behavior, the model observers and things like that. Some attribute that is well named by the Laravel team, no doubt, that allows you to do that might be an approach to go.
And since I'm already doing this, so like since I'm already in my CI doing this thing where when I'm deploying, I'm looping through every feature and sort of pre-caching it, you know what I mean? I could just say And each one, like I could have like a global list of loaded features, and then I could have, here's the features with this tag, and here's the features with this tag. And so if I said, you know, feature load for scope user, whatever it is, I can't remember exactly what it is, but then you list all the features. Load missing is what it is. Feature load missing. And then you pass in the list of features. It'll eager load them for you. So just one query instead of 15 or 20 or whatever it is, you know?
Yeah.
So interesting. Okay. Some homework for me. That could be cool. But yeah. I've really liked using it, and I feel like it has done a lot of good for me, and really excited about this new one. So pretty cool.
Someone will no doubt write some kind of Filament plugin or Nova plugin or something, you know, to manage features in the application that you can just drop into your app and then off you go, which would be really handy as well.
Okay. Go ahead.
On the subject of eager loading, if we're ready to move on from Panic.
I do have one more thing to talk about with features, but we can come back to it because it's not necessarily specific to features. So go ahead. Eager loading.
So we have this like one endpoint in our application that is responsible for calculating the state of an application. So there are multiple steps in in the application.
Yes, multiple steps.
And
yes.
each step has a status, and the status could be, you know, complete or pristine, which means it hasn't been accessed yet.
I like that. Oh, that is such a good name. I've used fresh before. I hate fresh. Pristine is better. Pristine. Way better. Yes.
Yeah. So each step can exist in one of these three statuses. But sometimes you might move between a wizarded flow. So the steps are different, or there's different requirements depending on what you're in. So anytime you open an application, we hit this endpoint that goes through and calculates the state that the application is in, where you're up to, how much you've completed, whatever else. For, as it turns out, 2 years, right, this endpoint has existed. It has, this is a persistent bug that has been there for 2 years, but it presented sporadically. And it was not like a per application thing. It was just like a time of day thing. If, you know, the right number of people happened to open an application at the same time, like weird things would happen. And instead of taking like a second or a few hundred milliseconds, it would take 30 seconds or 60 seconds, or it would time out. And because of the sporadic presentation of this bug, it's been very difficult to track down, because usually by the time you get a report of it and you look at it, the issue's gone away.
It's fixed. Yep.
It's fixed. It's gone away. But it's always crept up, you know, every now and then, and to the point where no one was reporting it anymore because it wasn't happening anymore. But yesterday, so we've been doing these merging of tenants over the past few weeks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so we've done 6 out of 7 so far. So we've basically
almost there.
Considerably grown the size of this single tenant over the last few weeks. And yesterday, fortunately, when I was not at work, there were all these reports of like all of these timeouts and this endpoint that, you know, is typically fine, but sporadically not, was like getting to the point where every time it was opened, it would cause an error. And I got a message at like 8 o'clock last night, 9 o'clock last night from my boss, who's like, I have cracked it finally. He's like, please review this PR. And what it boiled down to was we had changed a bunch of stuff from doing some explicit queries to using eager loads or lazy eager loads. So you can do like model arrow load, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, right.
So we were saying, you know, instead of querying the database again, we'll like just say, go and get me these records. And it was some, you know, there was some nesting. So we were getting like a status dot step dot state or whatever it was. The problem was, as we had merged the tenants together, we had gone from like a few hundred of these types of records in a tenant to tens of thousands of records in this tenant. Mm. And because this thing was like doing model arrow load, whatever, it was loading not every single one related to the application.
Oh, gosh.
Every single record that existed in the database of that record type. Now, when you've only got hundreds of records, sure, that's going to present sporadically, isn't it? Because, you know, sometimes you load a couple of hundred records and no one will be doing anything and it'll be fine. And sometimes you'll have three or four people do it and it's going to go through this every single time. So the solution to this problem was to like explicitly add like where has on the
lazy load
to say like load arrow statuses arrow where has application ID equal the application that was being loaded.
You would think so that relationship would just figure that out. Like you would think it would just do that. Yeah,
but it was not. So it was not like the parent relationship. It was not the application that we were loading from. Okay. It was from like the application.
A nested child sort of thing.
The wizard, yeah. So it had lost that linkage.
Got it, yeah.
So yeah, we were eager loading the records we thought we needed. It's just because they were not scoped to the application that was being requested. It was loading, you know, a few weeks ago, a couple of hundred records, and then it was 1,000 records, and then it was 5,000 records until yesterday. You know, you have seven or eight people open tens of thousands of records at once, and it's like churning through each of those things to try and calculate the state. And it was like, so effectively, it was recalculating the state for every single application, every time one application was open. Gosh,
that's brutal.
And we got to the point where this was happening so much that like the IOPS were through the roof on the RDS instance, which then caused the CPU credits to go bye-bye.
Through the roof as well.
So basically we solved this two-year-old bug. Well, I say we. My boss solved this two-year-old bug within, 12 hours out of necessity because it took, the database down, which by and large is very over-provisioned for our needs. It's just this one endpoint.
You had to get all those records in there in order to be able to reproduce it consistently enough to find out what the problem
like
was.
If it was not for the fact that we merged the tenants together, this issue might not have presented itself for 2, 3, 5 years, whatever. But because we combined, thousands and thousands of applications over several years. And it's like, and I looked at, and I'm like, oh no, I wrote that eager load 2 years ago.
Oh no, yeah.
So there you go.
It's easy to do. It really is easy to do.
Production database back to zero.
Well, the thing is, it actually was crashing it all the time. It's just, I had a similar situation today where it was like we had a worker, a background sort of Lambda thing that was just running jobs and crashed our main application, like our actual like system of record, just literally pegged the CPU, hung, everybody had to get out. And we're like, okay, what was that about? And so go in and
Lime Redis.
Restart it and like restart the application server. Like, what's going on? Okay. All right. And so I was like, pause our Lambda there. And it was like, okay. So everything came back up. We're like, okay, let's start it. And then we started it and watching the CPU, like, pegged, like, dang it, okay, pause it again, went back down to 60, like, okay, start it one more time, grow, pegged. I'm like, okay, well, we know what it is. So that's like, so I just had to reduce the number of workers and then it kind of settled down a little bit. But yeah, I mean, sometimes it's just like you don't know until I've never had that many jobs in there before. It was like 10,000 jobs backed up, and it's like you just never know. I've never had to. It's never been pushed that hard, and so whatever. So I had to limit the number of workers.
Yeah, you can plan for like some end state, but a lot of the time you're so busy focused on like what can we deliver now to make the business get there that it's like sometimes these issues at scale don't actually present until you're at scale.
And until you
get there,
you won't know. And you're just like, if you always were trying to prepare for that and always trying to like mitigate those risks before they became risks, you'd never ship. That's the problem. Yeah. So it's like you kind of just got to get it out there. That's why feature flags are important. And then secondly, like Blackfire, whatever it is, like those monitoring things too. To be like, where are the slow queries? Oh, okay, here's the slow queries. I need to go fix those up.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, it comes down to how well you respond to those issues and what's your workflow like in terms of addressing it when it happens.
Yes.
And we've got, I've poo-pooed Datadog in the past because it is like a very heavy, very complex piece of software that, does a lot of stuff. But if not for like the traces in there and like the query monitoring, all of that stuff, we wouldn't have been able to kind of narrow down the exact query, which then helped us narrow down the exact line of code, which then allowed us to figure out, you know, oh, we were not scoping that query. So instead of taking, you know, 10, 15 seconds for this query to execute in isolation, you know, when no one else was using the system, it's now like consistently less than 1 second. So
that's awesome.
So yeah,
it feels good. Feels good.
Yeah, it's good. And like, I wasn't involved in the fix, so that's nice. Like, believe it or not, like, yes, I introduced it, and if I was at work, I probably would have gotten to the bottom of it. But it's nice that we've grown as a business and as a team to the point where like anyone can look at any of these things and just deal with it. So that's, you know, from a team and business growth perspective, it's really good.
That's awesome. Yeah. It's nice to have somebody else on the team other than you that can fix the problem, you know?
Mm-hmm. My boss, shout out to Sam. He has changed his profile picture in Slack to Fireman Sam, because he just seems to be putting out fires for everyone lately. So
Fireman Sam, I love it. That's great. That's funny. All right, dude, let's wrap this one up. What do we got? 157? Is that what it was?
158.
158. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in, hanging out with us. Find show notes for this episode at northmeetsouth.audio/158. Hit us up on Twitter at Michael Durda, at Jacob Bennett, at North South Audio. And as always, if you like the show, rate it up in your podcatcher of choice. 5 stars would be incredible, amazing, and awesome. All right, folks. See you in 2 weeks. Peace.